Welcome to Tarot for the Wild Soul, a podcast that explores the tarot through an inclusive, soul-centered, trauma-informed perspective for growth, healing, and evolution. I'm your host, Lindsay Mack. Hello, Wild Souls, and welcome back to Tarot for the Wild Soul. I am Lindsay, and as always, it is a joy, an honor, and a privilege to be gathered with all of you. Thank you so much for being here. This is a pretty intense stretch of time here that we've got. I feel like I'm still feeling that Pisces full moon, and just tricky energy right now. Just sending a big warm wave of love to everybody listening to this, because times are, for most of us, a little crunchy out there. Hopefully you're doing better. Someone's listening to this and is like, I'm doing great. I think that's awesome. Hopefully I'll be there with you very soon. Everything's honestly great. It's just energetically, it's really crispy, crunchy, and there doesn't feel like there's a whole lot to do about it right now, which is so difficult, because normally if we're in a crunchy time, we're working on surrendering to what is, obviously, in every moment of our lives. But sometimes there are pathways out or pathways around or pathways through something. And at least for me, maybe it's because I'm having like a chariot tethered 1 year personally, that it's just kind of suspension on suspension. Maybe it's different for other folks, but I don't know. People who I talk to, it seems to be like crunchy, suspended crunchy. So if this is a universal thing, again, warm wave of care. It's not permanent. We'll move through it, but it's not the most comfortable experience, to be sure. So our episode today is about the three lines of the major arcana. So it is two reasons why we're talking about this, which I think deserve an explanation, because I have talked about the three lines of the tarot many times on this podcast. In fact, there are other episodes devoted like literally to the three lines of the tarot. I teach about the three lines of the tarot. Why go through it again? Well, number one, because a newer listener asked me a question about them, which I'll read in a moment. And two, because there are so many episodes of this podcast, and because it stretches back so many years, that I do think it's helpful to bring back fundamental topics. And I do think that because I grow and change myself, I might have different things to offer about them. And two, it, provides a little bit of a service to folks who've been here for a while, or who are newer here. Hopefully folks who've been here for a while will indulge me. But also because on this podcast and with this work, we talk about tarot for what is, for this moment, for what arises. How can tarot be ultimately a useful thing for anything that might arise? And for a season like this, where things are really liminal and suspended and crunchy and funky, the three lines can be very helpful as a compass for getting a sense of like where we're at. It helps to filter the cards in a very broad way, to kind of have an understanding, just kind of on the barest sense, like, okay, this is a line three card. So we know that somewhere in the card's essence, it's bringing a line three invitation. And we'll talk about what that is. It's not necessarily fresh and new. And yet, this is a tarot podcast. So it's like at a certain point, we're refining and sensing into things and topics that we might already have a knowledge base or understanding of. But deepening into it is the whole point of learning. And the way that I'm going to talk about the three lines is again, how they can be really useful as a contextual guide for where the card might be leading us to pay attention to. So before I get into even what the three lines are, for folks who may have no clue what they are, I'm going to read our wonderful listener question to tee us up for the work we're going to do today. So this is from Adhana. And Adhana says, "Hello, Lindsay. I've been a practitioner of tarot for a couple months now, and your podcast has helped me so deeply in the understanding of the cards. Thank you so much for putting out such fantastic content." Thank you, Adhana. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being here. "So last week you were discussing similar cards, and you mentioned discussing multiple times the three-line approach to tarot explained by Rachel Pollack in 78 Degrees of Wisdom. I've worked with that book in the past, but was never able to incorporate that piece of her wisdom into my practice. Would you care to explain how you work with the three lines? Do you understand? How do you understand each and what it can show about the Fool's journey in the stage of life we are in and where the reading is at? Thank you so much for everything you do. Have a great day." You too, Adhana. Thank you. I want to start with acknowledgement, respect paid to beloved and lovely Rachel Pollack, who recently passed and died. Blessings on her and those who loved her and all of us who have been benefited by her tremendous work and, you know, contributions to the field of tarot. There's just so much that we wouldn't have without Rachel Pollack. So just bowing so deeply. And yes, the three lines of the tarot are a Rachel Pollack concept and spoken about in Tarot Wisdom and 78 Degrees of Wisdom, two wonderful books by Rachel Pollack. So what Rachel Pollack, what the three lines are quite literally, so there are 22 major arcana cards. So what Rachel Pollack did was remove the Fool and kind of put it up at the top of an imaginary piece of paper. So the Fool is up top, and then we have three lines of seven, right? Because with the Fool, it's 22. If we remove the Fool, it's 21. So we have one line of seven cards in our first line, which is Magician to the Chariot. Our second line is Strength or Justice, depending on the tarot deck you work with. Those are sometimes interchangeable. I probably won't go into why today, but it's definitely something I've talked about, written about, spoken about on the podcast. So feel free to just search or email us at info@tarotforthewildsoul.com. We'll help you to get a feel for where that episode might be if you're curious, or you can just Google it. in terms of Golden Dawn ordering, which is typically the ordering we go on, but totally respect that some folks do not. In the second line, we go from Strength to Temperance. And then in the third line, we go from the Devil to the World. So Rachel Pollack posited that each of these three lines represented certain aspects of really the hero's journey or the Fool's journey, right? And does a lovely job in conveying what their basically their theory is and how we can look at each of these sets of three, seven cards as a whole, kind of as a whole journey in and of itself that flows into one another. And the Fool is separate, in my opinion, although I'm sure Rachel says their own version of, like, I'm sure Rachel has both similar things to say and her own wise thoughts about what to say. The Fool is separate because, one, kind of logistically speaking, it's card zero. So it's not, it is a number and it's not a number, right? It's absolutely of value, and also zero is a void space. So the Fool is operating in its own world, basically. And we have to work through the Fool in order to start the journey. So in a lot of ways, just energetically, symbolically, it's kind of like an in utero space. If you've ever experienced what it is to feel like you're in that waiting room between where you are right now and a leap into something very new, very different that radically changes your life. It could be a very internal thing or a very externally based leap. All of that is sort of woven in what the Fool is. And there's something very powerful about the Fool being separate, because it's essentially letting us know that the Fool is kind of the umbrella on which this whole journey occurs. Because the Fool is, in my opinion, really just akin to the soul. It's, you know, I think probably the dominant culture thinks of living in a soul-led way as being pretty foolish and being something we can't really prove, which is valid, you know, it is. And yet, there are so many people out there who experience regret for their lives, really, for not kind of honoring the call of their soul when they felt it, right? So working with the Fool, getting used to that level of discomfort, getting used to that level of self-sovereignty and of deep listening and deep reflection, so that when we do understand that, you know, we're being called to take a leap, we can. And in Soul Tarot, right, there's levels to the Fool, right? I acknowledge that the Fool can sometimes truly be a big leap, but I think, and I'm actually going to be pretty bold here and say 8 times out of 10, there is no discernible or tangible leap. There is a kind of a leap that we do from the comfort, safety, and false refuge of the mind, and the way that we can feel in a completely valid and understandable way more drawn to do what we've done before, even if it's not really working, you know? So we can want to grip onto that, on what others have done, on, again, those refuges of safety, of perceived safety. And it's only when we kind of take the leap from that part of the earth to like jump over the gap to the soul, to like, okay, fuck it, I'm going to try something new, something different. I'm going to adjust this. I'm going to, in a way that feels accessible and within my capacity to actually execute and cope, this is what I'm going to try. This is what I'm going to do. So it does require that kind of a leap. And that's actually the leap that I think is always present in the Fool. But an actual discernible, tangible, like, I'm leaving my job for this, I'm doing this thing, I'm going to say it's about a 50-50 shot. And you could say the same for every card. The truth with the Fool is that, and not to like be so like dramatic potentially about it, but that we're all going to eventually transition from these bodies. This life is not a permanent thing, right? And is a gift. There are some incredibly challenging things about being alive, but is a gift. And the Fool is a moment when we understand, which I think is beautifully present in this symbolism of the white rose that the Fool is carrying in Smith Rider Waite tarot. The minute we pick a flower, it is on its way to dying. And the Fool, I think we could take the, and again, it's all up to interpretation, but what has always struck me about the Smith Rider Waite Fool is that they know there's no ground underneath them. They know they're about to walk off of the edge of something. They're leaving behind the edge of what is known and familiar for the true refuge of the moment of presence of a soul-led life. And a soul-led life is not rooted in magical thinking. It's not rooted in delusion. It's actually rooted in warm presence and real sovereignty in a lot of quiet, and a lot of transparency, and a lot of authenticity, and understanding that authenticity really changes, and like honoring seasonality of self, even if it doesn't totally make sense to other people. All of that is within the Fool. It's the understanding, really, in Soul Tarot, we look at the Fool not as a leap, really, but as an understanding that there's never actually been ground underneath us to begin with. You know, that That is my teaching on it, is that there is no ground. That is an illusion in and of itself. So when we understand that, we're not getting out of this thing alive. We are a little bit less precious, or are willing at the very least to take a dive into something that's calling out for us. We can give it a try. You know, we can see how it works. And sometimes those calls of the soul are tricky. Like, I've had moments when I feel an incredible call to something and totally fall on my face. It doesn't work out. Sometimes that's a teachable moment to be like, okay, great. Like, again, not magical thinking. Like, sometimes you have to try certain things to figure out what didn't work, try again, reshape it. And other times you do something and you realize, oh, okay, I tried that thing. I got it out of my system. I don't want to do it. And now I know, you know, now we know. And it's as simple as that. Sometimes we're called to do certain things so we can actually kind of clear them off our plate. And in my opinion, too, the Fool is actually present in the entire journey of the Major Arcana. It is the golden thread that ties each card together. It's the evolutionary jump and leap that helps us to move from one card to another, or we would remain static. That's why nothing in life ever changes, right? So all that to say that that's my take on the Fool. And I'm sure Rachel Pollack has some gorgeous things to say about it as well. Maybe they're similar, maybe they're not. So my take on the three lines themselves is likely not that different from Rachel Pollack's. Maybe, maybe not. It's been a minute since I've read 78 Degrees of Wisdom, at least 8 years since I've cracked that book open. So, you know, maybe it's shockingly similar. just again, in the acknowledgement that Rachel Pollack is the person who came up with all this, we're bowing to her wisdom and to her lineage of teaching inside of these theories. So in Soul Tarot, we look to these lines. Essentially, line one is the lifeline, line two is the death line, line three is the rebirth line. Not very dissimilar from what Rachel Pollack says as well. We might even look at it as like id, ego, and superego, right? We might look at it as, you know, yeah. another great way that I think is really useful for looking at it that I've taught students is line one is the caterpillar line, line two is the chrysalis line, line three is the butterfly line. In my kind of lived experience with these cards and these energies, I'd say that's the closest to what it actually feels like to go through it, to what it actually feels like to move through that kind of energy and essence and invitation and flow. So that being said, there is something really, really powerful about working with the three lines. Again, for all the reasons I mentioned before, it can help to give us context about where to filter out a card. It can help to give us a sense of where we're at in our journey. So in terms of how the three lines are honored and taught in Soul Tarot, line one is the line of necessary egoic foundation. And I look to and work with a lot of Smith Rider-Waite imagery to help anchor us into this, not because I am a Smith Rider-Waite advocate, even though I acknowledge and honor Pamela Colman Smith's enormous contribution to what is modern day tarot reading and interpretation, but because I think it provides an incredibly useful context, because I think they really got it right. Not that there's a wrong, but I think there's just something of real tremendous value to look to here. And you don't have to work with the Smith Rider-Waite to appreciate the medicine of the three lines. So the reason why I term line one is necessary egoic foundation is because there has to be necessary egoic foundation in our lives and in our experience. Ego is not a problem a lot of the time. It's sometimes a problem and other times is really useful and very necessary. So if we look at the titles of the cards in line one, the Magician, the High Priestess, the Empress, the Emperor, these are identities. These are titles. You know, it's very close to us saying like, I am the Magician. I am the High Priestess. To anybody who, and, you know, again, raising a child, there is so much of my daughter's 18 months old at the recording of this. There's so much of line one in my daughter. She's discovering strength, her body, what hurts, what feels good, what she likes, what she doesn't like, yes and no. This is line one. We are figuring out who we are, our power, how we wield that power, like what we're working, what energies we're working with. We learn how to channel out. We learn how to channel down and in. We learn how to receive. We learn how to trust ourselves enough to move forward and give. And then we individuate in Hierophant and Lovers, and we graduate in the Chariot. That's all present in line one. And we can go through line one at any point in life. At any point in life, we can be going through a line one experience. We rebirth and evolve all the time. We think we know where we're at, and then we realize, like, in the middle of our lives, late in our lives, holy shit, I've discovered this aspect of myself. I've left a relationship. I've moved into something different. Oh my goodness. And there's all of this expansion and new discovery that takes place. That's a line one time where we're really focused on us, who we are, what we can do, what we can create, all of it. It's very important, right? All of it. And then, you know, it's caterpillar, right? We are born, we consume, we grow, we learn, and then we get into the Chariot, which is the last card in line one. And we realize, oh, there's a lot of different things about me, about what I do, what I offer, what I give, who I am, the containers that I've been held in or I've held myself in that doesn't work. And this may be devastating, it may be shocking, it may be terrifying, it may be a relief, it may be a mixture or something completely different. But we understand, or at least are forced or called to understand, that some aspect of that identity can't go with us into this phase of our lives. It served us, and now we have to shed it in a necessary way in order to really embark on the road that's calling out for us. So there's a massive evolution, and the Fool does come through to help us get out of the Chariot. The Chariot is all soul. All these cards are all soul. Chariot is a massive trust fall. Massive. Where we say, okay, I guess I'll leave behind this like perfect little container that looks really good, but isn't kind of working. And I have outgrown it. I'm trying to make myself like it and stay, but it's really time to go. I'm not quite sure what comes next. All of that is woven in the Chariot. So once we leap out of that Chariot, we kick off our journey in line two. And line two is the line, if line one is the line of I am, right? Which is how I teach it. There's like little phrases that go along with the line. It's the I am line. Line two is who am I? Line two energy is the chrysalis. We don't know what's going on. What's going on in line two is that we're slowly but surely liquidating the egoic constructs that have been created in line one and clearing those out for soul and a deeper collaboration with spirit to unfold. So there's a lot of cards that seem in theory to be very repetitive, and they're all about kind of like be here as things shift, be present as like whatever, but they all have their own flavor and note on the piano, but they are similar to one another and singing very close to one another because all of them do that same thing. They're all here to gently and consensually break those egoic pieces down. Because to live with those still operating in the way they do, driving the car, is not really going to be in service, not just to us, but what we want to the planet across the board. So strength kicks off this journey where we learn how to turn toward the heart and face things that are really uncomfortable. And we learn about the transformation personally and, you know, in a larger way than us that happens when we do that. You know, when we're willing to be present with what is calling out for us. The hermit really calls on us to shift the way that we typically try to leap into external things to escape the moment and what really needs our attention. Wheel of Fortune is when we kind of work with external change moments when things are really shifting around us. We're called to really stay at the center of the wheel rather than the tire of the wheel, so we don't feel every bump as that wheel turns. Justice is an incredibly massive energy that I've talked about many times. Essentially invites us to really be with what is rather than what we want to be, what should be, what is, so we can actually be free enough and spacious enough to take action to move it closer to what it should be or what we want to be, what we want to be. And then Tethered One is the ultimate cocoon. It's really, I think, the card where a lot of the dying that precedes the death card happens. This is really where we shed, we process. This is the active state of kind of soul dying or ego dying, really. We go through lots of stages of grief in this card. It's a very powerful experience. And death is really the expansion that comes from that. There's still a lot of ego work where we finally make the decision like, okay, these things have to get uprooted. They have to change. They have to shift. They have to flow in order to move into this different direction. And Temperance is the moment where we say, I want to live this life with spirit, with my soul. I want to say yes. And then that kicks off a very powerful, but very slow change, very slow. And then in Temperance, you know, it's not talked often enough about, but it is true that when we're really on the verge of something very expansive, very hugely soul-led, there's typically a tremendous amount of contraction that presents itself with that. That is the truth. And the story that if things are, now I do want to be very clear here. I'm like catching myself before I say something. Sometimes we have a knowing or we have an understanding or a realization to do something. And it is so, it's like a wave breaking. It's so refreshing. It's so clear. It sets us free. There's like, you know, immediately a massive density that's shifted. We feel so light. We feel like it's amazing. There can still be contraction that comes up. We can feel so good about it and then be, should I? What about this? What about that? You know, and there can be doubt that sprouts from that place. And that's valuable to interrogate that doubt. Maybe there is something we didn't think about before. That's, you know, it can be really helpful. And a lot of the time, when we're on to something, contraction is typically very heavy, very present. You know, we can be cranky. There can be witnessed my partner go through this, that they had a really lovely, wonderful, surprising, delightful thing happen. And it was amazing. It was like beyond what they had hoped for and it wasn't like the biggest thing in the world, but it was a really important thing for them. And then for about 3-4 days, they were in such profound contraction about it. And, you know, obviously listened and held space, but also offered some gentle reminders that like, it makes all the sense in the world and it sucks. And it makes all the sense in the world that like after such a huge expansion, there would be such contraction. And it was a helpful and useful reminder. So we need the Fool to help pivot us out of Temperance, because it's one thing to kind of be in this space of like, I want to collaborate with spirit. It's quite another to actually live that. And once we're in a kind of a collaboration with spirit, things really start shifting. Because once we've said yes to the soul like that, and it's not like we say yes to spirit and spirit does all this stuff. We say yes to ourselves. And once we really say, I want to live in alignment with, I want to collaborate with spirit, you know, all this stuff, then things really start to shift. Relationships really start to, you know, earn their keep, you know, that we really start to move in some pretty profoundly different directions. And the reason that I mention everything I do about contraction following expansion is because the devil is the first card in line 3, a line where we really learn in Soul Tarot that there is no I to begin with. So I am is line 1. Who am I is line 2. There is no I. We understand like the I that we thought we were is completely different. And we're on a journey to discover that in an even deeper way. So the devil, a lot of different folks have different interpretations and ways of working with the devil, all of which I, other than ones that mean or indicate that there's like evil around or bad, those I do not endorse. And also, who gives a fuck what I think? People can do what they want, but I'm going to hold and, you know, stand in my own opinion, which is that I do not think that that is a useful interpretation. I think it's quite reductive, but that's, you know, they're not, that's, you know, it's just not the way I read, which is okay. You know, it's all right. Any and all ways of working with the devil, other than ones that I think are actively harmful, manipulative, or are reductive in some of the ways that I mentioned in my opinion, there's lots of different ways of working with this card, and I think all of them are really beneficial. What has been very true for me and what has been really true for the clients that I've served personally, is that the devil tends to arise in a moment where we're doing kind of everything right, when there is actually a lot to gain, there's actually a lot of expansion, and the mind, the brain, our nervous systems, the ego are probably a little freaked out about that, because the more we move closer to intuition and expansion and growth in ways that are really evolutionary, really profound, and really, you know, deep. Remember, the mind, the nervous system wants to keep us in what feels safe and familiar, comfortable, known. All that is unknown. All that soul stuff is unknown. So it feels kind of threatening to the mind sometimes for certain folks. My contractive responses from the brain have always been massive, but I also have pure OCD and my intrusive thinking is enormous and have had severe trauma and have, you know, complex PTSD. And so maybe it's more intense for me, but I know for a lot of folks, they deal with quite a bit of brain noise when they move through these kinds of experiences. So with the devil, we learn we don't necessarily have to identify with that thinking. It's very hard. It's very painful. But we, if we can, in whatever way is accessible to us, we can cut the chain of reactivity by noticing the thinking, noticing the invitations. Sometimes those invitations in the devil are really painful. There's old invitations into like really tough stories that were bad, when we've made mistakes, when we felt ashamed, when we've done some things we regret. And it's all really just sort of to slow us down and get us back into what feels more comfortable. So all that to say that it's a very powerful thing to work with devil, but it doesn't come up unless we're in the midst of some pretty huge expansions. So that's the start of our line 1 journey. In fact, like I actually think magician strength and devil kind of tell us everything we need to know about each of these three journeys. With the magician kicking off line 1, we're understanding that we're learning how to wield our own personal power in conjunction with what's in alignment for all you know? It's Mercury. It's a journey of channeling and thought and reflection and talking and communicating. There's a lot of good Mercury work that happens in line one. In line two, it's Leo, it's fixed fire. It's a journey of the heart, period. It's a journey of the heart, you know, to move through these kinds of underworld journeys, to move through these kinds of caves of the soul, to clear out ego, to allow ourselves to see others, be seen, dive in very deeply, do very, very deep work. Really, in every card in line two, we're touching on the heart of what is, and we're facing down the lion that's present. And in the Devil, which is ruled by Capricorn, we're learning and discerning the mountains that we really are called to climb versus the mountains that are there and calling us, but they're not for us. So we really learn it's cardinal earth. There's a lot of power that we have the opportunity to reclaim, and also typically a lot of very big chains to cut so that we can be liberated from some of the beliefs that have dragged us down. And then we have after the Devil in line three, we have the Tower, which is absolutely a clearing away of the structures that no longer serve us. We have the Star, which is a necessary time of cooling and healing after said Tower experience. We have the Moon, which is very intense and typically does call us into some pretty profound, like psychic, deep, deep work, trust work with kind of echoes of the past so that we can really clear and process that and move into the Sun where the light dawns. We're able to get a sense of what's going on. Things are illuminated. We deepen into the work. We start in the Sun by moving into Judgment, which is a big eye-opening, awakening energy where we start to understand things that we didn't understand before. And we begin to excavate things that are really ready to be seen and processed, which leads us into the World, which is the last card in line three, where we are actually able to leap into the new. We are actually able to clear out everything that's not meant to go through us, not meant to go with us, into this new cycle. We leave the World, we enter the liminal space of the Fool, and then we prepare to start the journey all over again in a different way, in a new spiral of understanding. So that in a nutshell is the three lines as I see them. And, you know, just again, bowing to Rachel Pollack and their extraordinary, beautiful work that they've blessed us with. So I hope this helps your journey, and I hope this helps your work as you continue to befriend and make sense of the three lines. Hopefully I didn't leave. Oh, the reason that I mentioned the Smith Rider Waite imagery, and it didn't actually play that big of a part in the work that I just did with this one, but what I think can be kind of a useful key is if we look at, you can Google this, if you look at three lines of the Major Arcana, or you set it up for yourself. The first line of the Majors is mostly humans sitting in the foreground. And that's the focus, right? It's just humans and their titles and their identities. Line two, it's humans, but they're in different physical shapes than they are in line two or line one, sorry. In line two, we have a person who is, you know, placing their hand on a lion. We have that interaction. We have an elder in the Hermit. We have a human being in a similar kind of position in Justice. And then really nothing else quite like that. We have different deities, different of a big wheel, like there's different things going on, and human beings are in different shapes, different positions than they were in line one. And then in line three, it's mostly objects, astronomical bodies like the Moon and the Sun that are in the forefront. It is no longer human beings. We are no longer in the forefront. We are a part of a larger action. So again, ego recedes as we move through the three lines. And I think that that was so brilliantly captured. So I'll offer that as a final note. Hopefully this helps. I think that the three lines are a tremendously helpful tool as far as learning tarot goes and how we can make sense of it. And hopefully the link to Rachel Pollack and my own understanding of the three lines is very useful. So thank you for being here, Wild Souls. Loving on all of you. And I hope you have an absolutely beautiful week. I'll touch base with you next week. Until then, please take care of yourselves. This podcast was edited by Chase Voorhees, podcast art by Rochelle Sartini Gardner, and this episode was transcribed by one of our absolutely brilliant and beautiful transcriptionists, all of which you can learn more about or read about on our website, tarotforthewildsoul.com. If you wish to dive into more of my work, learn more about Soul Tarot, work with me in any kind of capacity, I'm always creating new things for us to do together, but you can find all about our self-led courses and classes and new offerings on tarotforthewildsoul.com. And if you want to be the first to know about any new offerings, any new projects that I'm doing, if you want to benefit from discounts and early birds and all kinds of lovely newsletter-only offerings, you can sign up for the newsletter at the link in our show notes. And finally, if you have a question for me to answer at the podcast, or if you'd like to work with me live on the podcast, or if you'd like your question answered on the podcast, please click the link to Ask Lindsay and send me your cues. Thank you so much for being here.